Good morning, everybody. 15 minutes isn't a lot of time. I thought I'd have 30, so it'd be a bit of a canter through. But I'm here all day today and tomorrow, so please grab me at any of the intervals. My bio is in the programme, just in case you haven't read it. My day job is in DSTL as a senior principal psychologist, and also have a reserves role in SGMI for my 77 brigade brethren that are here today. I'm not a war gamer, amateur or professional. Just a psychologist. I've been involved or watched quite a lot of war games, which is why I was asked today. And just a reminder that the PDF of this presentation will be uploaded onto the system after the conference, so it has all my contact details, and all the references that are in here are in full as well, so I don't feel you've got to scribble a lot of stuff. Okay, the contents of this, I was asked really to give an introduction about psychology and what people might think psychology is about, but just clarify some points on psychology and behaviour and how that might relate to wargaming. So that's the contents that you can see. I won't dwell on it too long. So what is psychology? So according to the British Psychological Society, which is the professional body for psychologists in the United Kingdom, psychology is the scientific study of mind and how it dictates and influences our behaviour, from communication and memory to thought and emotion. So quite a broad-ranging definition and description of psychology there. And of course, there's a dummy's guide on everything these days. So if you don't want to buy a big, thick academic text on psychology, why not get a nice, simple dummy's guide to psychology as some bedtime reading? Psychology is a broad church. It really is. There are 9 chartership routes for chartership as a professional psychologist in the UK. Health psychology, education psychology, so something there for Philip to consider. Clinical psychology, counselling, neuropsychology, forensic psychology, if you like dealing with criminals. Clinical psychology, sports and exercise, and of course academia, research and teaching if your specialism doesn't fit into there. So they're the 9 broad areas that you could be chartered in. There are 11 divisions in all across the BPS, British Psychological Society, and 22 special interest specialist group sections. And again, social psychology, cognitive psychology, defence and security is a new section that we set up last year, and our conference for that is this November. Cyber is obviously a new area, and then all those areas that you can read there. So again, the key message here really is everybody has a perception of what they think psychology is. It could be social, or it could be just what happens in your head in terms of cognitive psychology. But just to say that psychology is a very broad discipline, and you need to consider that when you think about behaviour for whatever you want to study. So, many terms for the same thing. Being a psychologist, I will use psychology, or psychological science is another term you'll hear. Often people will just put it in the social sciences with everything from anthropology to economics, sociology as well, political science, but it is slightly separate. A very common term that you'll hear now is behavioural science. That's really quite cross-disciplinary. Terms like psychologist are protected professionally, so if you haven't got a psychology degree and therefore you can't call yourself a psychologist or an anthropologist or a sociologist, you tend to find that those people tend to call themselves behavioural scientists because it's a good way of getting around having to do an undergraduate and master's and join another professional body. The catch-all title when I first started many years ago, and it's still around now, is really human factors. Now that has a very engineering background in ergonomics and engineering, but again it's one of those catch-all titles that people talk about when they think about behaviour or anything to do with humans. They just go, yes, that human factors stuff. So again, terms are quite important to people from those disciplines because they want to know what exactly is it that you're on about so that we can help you with our advice and guidance. Of course, we have big data analytics and digital stuff these days, and that, of course, has spurned a whole new bunch of terms that you've probably come across. Behavioural analytics, computational social science, social physics, there's a couple of books on that, and also social data science. And they're really the same terms for the same sort of different terms for the same sort of thing, which is this idea now that we can simply go and get lots of data that's on there on the internet or through systems and actually rather than design questionnaires or do field studies or do experiments, all that data will give us access and insights into people's mind and behaviour. And at times, that's really useful, and at times it's completely rubbish because you're just going after data that you can get. You know, it's all about interpretation, mixed methods approaches, and a good experimental way forward. So the key messages from those first couple of slides are really that psychology is a broad church of disciplines. Be clear about what aspects of behaviour you might be interested in for wargaming, and also remember that psychology fundamentally has a scientific basis to it. We want to look at this in a scientific, empirical way. It's not all about Freud and Jung anymore. So two things I want to look at in terms of wargaming, really. This internal dynamics and external. So the first one about internal dynamics is what's going on during the war game. Okay, so you've got all these players, they could be playing against each other, you've got the controllers, adjudication, so you've got a bunch of humans in the room. And actually, they're quite important, those dynamics. And we had a really good question yesterday in the RCAT session about deciding whether you're playing the person opposite you as an individual, or do they really understand how the Russians think? And that's a really, really good question, because that starts to act like a confounding factor. If you think you're playing someone who they think understands Russian mentality, but actually they're bringing their own personality and their own sort of way of thinking into all of this as well. So it could act as a confounding variable, and therefore it's important to consider these things in your wargame design. The external way is really looking about how you're using wargame to look at a specific context. And we'll get into that in a minute. So a few notes on that first one, really, the internal dynamics. So as I said, you've got to consider the range of dynamics. They are interpersonal, so between people and between the players and the controllers. There is intrapersonal, so what's happening within the person or within that team as well, if they're playing another team. You've got to look at how experiences and expectations influence their engagement. So some people might have a mindset, a very fixed mindset from their experiences of doing wargaming, and therefore it's very, very hard to break out, to have a new way of thinking and a new way of considering things. That's why behaviour change is very, very difficult. If it was so easy to do more exercise, to stop drinking, to stop smoking, to eat five fruit and veg a day, we'd all do it. But it's difficult because it's not much fun. It's much more fun to have a beer, relax, chill out, and eat what you want. Okay, so that's the complexity of behaviour change there. You've also got this thing about confidence and optimism on one side of the players through to anxiety and fear. So again, very experienced war gamers may give you the impression that they're confident about what they're doing, and people new to wargaming, as I was with my role yesterday in Yardcat, hiding my sort of fear and anxiety that am I going to be able to do this in front of a very experienced and professional bunch of hobbyist war gamers as well. And then you've got the whole idea of group dynamics. You've got in-groups and out-groups, you've got prejudice, conformity, obedience, minority. You know, these theories have been written about in social psychology since the 1950s. There's a huge amount of literature out there on this stuff. And they all play a part of these internal dynamics of what's going in war games. And like I say, they act as a confounding variable to your design of your war game. So particularly for the military, you know, you have an organisational culture that might get in the way of how you behave. You've got rank, so if you have, you know, a bunch of privates and corporals, and then suddenly put in a couple of warrant officers and officers, you will see those dynamics shift massively. And I've seen this in my 20 years, where I've interviewed a lot of military people in focus groups, and you want a nice spread of people in the focus groups, but rank is always a confounding factor, because they just defer automatically to the senior NCOs or to the officers. And sometimes you just have to tell the officer to shut up and let a private have his opinion about what is going on. You've got to consider and control this in your design of your war game. It's not going to be perfect. I'm not saying that wargaming has to be experimental and it has to be an experiment, but if you have an experimental mindset, then it will help you consider and hopefully control for some of these variables that might pop up during your wargame. So when you're trying to interpret the findings and what happens, at least you've got some explanatory power to try and understand what was going on. There are a lot of theories in psychology, a huge number of theories, if anybody's any read psychology books. Just some of the things you could look at in war games, you know, patterns of behaviour, how people's attention changes, their decision making, which is quite common in war game studies, influences on behaviour, how information, certainly in this information age, has a big impact as well. And you can look at theories such as, and Philip's mentioned already, confirmation bias, there's belief bias, the gambler's fallacy, optimistic bias, framing effects, groupthink. I could go on and on and on for different theories that could potentially help or hinder your war game activity. And like I say, the war game allows you to explore and test these theories in either a top-down or bottom-up way that I'll explain briefly. Stephen Downs-Martin's here as well, so you know, I looked at his paper that was really good about war games as evidence, and it's a good paper, you know, about how people can be self-deceived into thinking that war games provide really robust evidence to make policy decisions or procurement decisions. So that's a good paper to look at and explains exactly how these the psychology of these things can influence real-world decisions in seniors. And again, you've got closed versus open games and what they offer you, the challenges and the opportunities that they both offer you. So in open game, you can look at all the non-verbal cues and you can, you know, you can outthink and outsmart your opponent. But in a closed game, you lose all those non-verbal communication clues, and therefore you've really got to base it on the understanding you've got of your enemy. And if you haven't got a good understanding, then you don't know how they think, you don't understand their decision calculus, and you have to work a lot harder to try and win your war game. The external stuff really is about how we've looked at studies applied to wargaming in the behavioural area. There's a good chapter by Bowman and Liebruth there. Again, it's all in the reference, which is a whole chapter on wargaming and the psychology of wargaming. There's some papers about ecological psychology, which is really about applied psychology, real-world psychology. There's quite a lot done in command and control and also decision-making. So that, I would say they're the dominant areas I've seen where wargaming has been applied to sort of psychological behavioural stuff, very much about decision-making, command and control processes. But actually, there's planning processes, which links to decision-making, stuff on information operations, and stuff about overconfidence and positive illusion, or what psychologists would call optimistic bias. And again, all those papers in the references. Quick word on the MOD hand, Wargaming Handbook, really useful book. You'll see there it talks about soft factors, and that really annoys me as a psychologist. Every 20 years, everybody keeps saying all this sort of soft stuff. Well, actually, it's front and centre and central to what you're trying to achieve. So in the handbook, it talks, you know, power 1.5, says that the fundamentals of wargaming about players, about their decisions, their narratives, their experiences, and their lessons. So it's important. Behaviour is important. It can be quantifiable. You can collect quantitative data on this stuff. It gives you numbers, scale, ratios, trends. It's observable. So we're not just thinking about accessing, you know, complicated stuff that's going on in our head, but we can look at observable behaviours and proxies for those behaviours. And we have to use a range of data to look at those things, objective, subjective, online, offline, formal, informal. It's all about the design of your war game. You know, if it was an experiment, how would you design the best experiment for a war game? What is your methodology? What is your analysis plan? What data are you going to collect? So it's just having that mindset, really. And some finally, some food for thought, some areas that you might want to think about for future war gaming stuff if you're not doing it. Looking at cultural differences is quite popular because, you know, we're international by design in future conflict scenarios, is the term that people use. We look at organisational culture, so not just between military units, but also how the military engages with other government departments and non-governmental organisations. So that brings up a lot about organisational cultures. It's all about information and information advantage and information manoeuvre, if you've read your military doctrine in the last 12 months. About understanding your enemy. And this is important when you look at things like deception and trying to outwit, or whether they're trying to outwit you. It's about, do you really have a good handle on understanding the thought processes and the stratagems of your adversary? Future threats and mitigations, there's loads of those because we live in a complex and competitive world. And again, you can look at all the policies and strategies. Basically, the array is limited only by the inventiveness of smart minds. So that's paraphrased from the deception specialist Barton Whaley. You know, he talked about sneaky minds, about weird minds, but actually in this room, I would say it's a bunch of smart minds. So really, the world is your oyster. And like I say, just pushing that point again about having an experimental mindset, but not doing experiments per se. My last point is really about interdisciplinary stuff, really, and about everybody thinks they do multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary, but we don't. You know, we're actually quite down to intradisciplinary and a bit of multidisciplinary. But the aim is to really go transdisciplinary. It's where working with people from different backgrounds, data scientists, war gamers, psychologists, you know, geographers, whoever you want to bring into your team to look at this war game, you're coming up with new paradigms of thinking, new methods, new models, new theories. That's the aspiration, not just getting a few different people in the room together, truly working in that transdisciplinary way. So in summary, psychology is a broad church. Just check what it is that you're interested in. Go and have a chat with a psychologist or social scientist or behavioural scientist and just have that sanity check with them. That was the same point. Moving towards that interdisciplinary approach and transdisciplinary approach. And also, you can use wargaming for either a bottom-up way to conduct exploratory discovery research. I think there's a very good avenue for that. And you can use it in a top-down way to test theories out there, but test them in a new way, trying to get data from a new perspective. And they are all the references, as you'll see, and hopefully I'll have a good conversation with some of you over the next 2 days. Thank you.
Great, thank you very much.